So, good day. This is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted to be here with Michael Warner. And we connected by accident through his PhD supervisor here at the University of Texas, Dallas, Carissa Terranova. But it turns out you have a very different story to tell us about today. So, Michael, tell us who you are and what you're up to.
Thank you, Dr. Molina. So, I am here by a random encounter that I had with my committee chair. And so I'm in the final stage before I get to the dissertation of my PhD program. And I was given a task to create a committee. And so most of my motivations come from her directly giving me insights. And also, based on my research background, I want to integrate technology with education and with philosophy. And so I had to figure out how to do that in the Arts and Humanities School. And so she referenced to speak to you and to get some insight and to become a guest speaker at the Watering Hole. And so I came today to give a presentation over how we're integrating philosophy and technology at the middle school that I'm an administrator at.
Okay, so that, you know, for our listeners, that's really strange. So, middle school is for kids aged what?
11 to 15, if they haven't graduated on time.
And you're trying to frame a new educational approach on philosophy and technology.
Yes.
So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So we want to challenge the traditional notion of what it's like to go to a standard public education school. And so if you go to a traditional middle school environment, you're going to have all of your standard sports and extracurricular activities. You're going to have band and football, and you're going to have your normal classes like English, science, social studies, reading.
Yeah.
But you're mostly limited on electives. You have traditional electives like speech or theater or art. But if you have a computer class, it's keyboarding, or it's not really refined so that students have the ability to experience
or create something,
or really just to learn something new. It's usually working with the Microsoft suite and doing some foundational fundamental
learning
skills.
Specific tools,
finance, making a budget, making a spreadsheet. But you know, how extensive can that be?
Okay, the other thing that is a bit unusual about your setting is you're in the school system. What's the name of the town of the
John Adams Middle School in Grand Prairie Independent School District.
And the history of the school system is not very good because it's very low rank in the ranking of schools. Is that right?
So our school traditionally is the one that people try to avoid because we're on the north side of town.
Uh-huh.
And the north side of town is predominantly not the higher social economic
poor
area.
People.
Yeah, and so we face lots of social stigma. We have fights all the time. We have kids that go there because they can't afford to go to the other areas because they don't live in the richer neighborhood.
And you also said one of the interesting things is English is not the native language of many of the kids, students.
Right.
So it's a very mixed population, and they're all being taught the same way.
Yes. So it's a mixed population. We have a high amount of students that are in inclusion programs. So that means that they're in regular classrooms and they're a special education student, but they're receiving the normal instruction that you would give to a standard student that's also going through the regular day-to-day schedule.
So the school system, as I understood it, kind of took a leap into the dark and was able to secure quite a lot of funding for the kind of school that you're talking about. I guess it was $1 million or something, and you got hired to basically figure out how to implement a rather different approach. So can you tell us a little bit about the different approach?
Yeah, so we had a vision, and I say we because I was not yet a part of the collective entity, but in spirit I was, because the team kind of brought me forth into existence. But the principal, Dr. Darwart Johnson, and his team brought together by community members, by teachers, by other staff members in the school, decided that they were going to make something innovative for the 21st century learner. So they applied for the Texas Education Agency Redesign Grant, and they won it, and they're one of the only 10 schools in Texas that won.
Okay, so you know, philosophy and technology. So I guess one of the things is you're trying to use digital technologies that the students learn how to use, but you also made the comment that most of these students don't have computers at home.
Correct.
So this is almost their only exposure to laptops, or do they have cell phones at home?
So that varies between family to family. What we do as a district is also provide the students one-to-one access, which means that every student is given an iPad from the district, and the students take that home with them over the break. They take that with them, and it is their iPad. So they're responsible for it, for its care, and for its usage. And they are also responsible users when they come to the Digital Arts and Technology Academy to use the IMEX.
But if it gets stolen, they're not responsible for paying you back.
Well, they are. They are. They do sign a technology agreement.
Uh-huh.
And so that's to keep the students and the parents accountable.
Aware.
For the usage.
You don't leave it lying around and your neighbor picked it up on the way to somewhere.
Correct. Yeah, because you don't want to incur a fee and then have to pay for it.
So there, I guess, one of the motivations is certainly for people that are getting jobs in the next 20, 30 years, familiarity with digital technologies and media is fundamental. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Almost,
you know, there isn't a job or a lifestyle where knowing how to use a cell phone, but not just for talking, is an essential skill. So where's the philosophy come in?
So the philosophy comes in with the engagements that we're designing for the students. We want them to imagine that when they come into the room, they are coming in to learn how to utilize their brain in a creative fashion. And that's not to answer a checkbox. That's not to meet the standardization that we're expecting for them to face if they go into a traditional content area like English, science, social studies, reading. Because when students work with technology, most of the time it's to engage with something that's very simple, like a YouTube video, right? Or to make a phone call or to play with an app. And so most of the time when students are doing this, they're having fun with it, but they're also learning something at the other end. They're learning how to control a figure in a 3D space, or they're learning how to arrive at a answer when they're using math. But they're being tricked in how they're doing it. And I find that really interesting, and we're trying to kind of emulate that same process in the room.
But at the same time, you're beginning to use terminology that in most cases their parents won't know, right? So how do you explain to the parents who want their kid to be a doctor, you know, why you're teaching, what were the four areas you mentioned?
So we're going to have we have the students do four pathways, and that's animation, motion graphics, web-based application development, radio, film, video production, and interactive media and game design. And so what we try to do to get the parents engaged so that they're also a part of that conversation is to be invited to the labs. So we have open workshops, so parents can come in and they can also learn the same things that their kids are learning. And we also have students that are leading those workshops. They're the instructors. So now it's no longer the barrier that comes from the teacher being the one that's the master. The students are the masters.
Okay, so as I mentioned to you, my personal narrative of why I'm in overlapping space with you, I'm now researching and teaching in the Art and Technology and Emerging Communication program, but my PhD is in astrophysics. And I was forced to retire in France at 65, and I decided to start a new career in art and technology. And so what's your personal narrative? What brought you to this point of being interested in one of the buzzwords right now is the STEM to STEAM discussion of how you integrate into learning things that used to be separate in the curriculum?
Sure. I think a lot of that came from me learning how to deal with my own traumas as a child. And so I had to figure out if there was not going to be food on the table, how was I going to distract myself and give myself the ability to have fun in an environment that was not fun or that was not going to be engaging to me, because I wasn't sure if I was going to have a bed to rest at that evening because I had parents that would fight back and forth every day, and I wasn't sure if I was going to be there or not. And so I just had tons of ways to escape, and I just kind of relished in that. And my desire when I was going to school was to kind of try to figure out how to escape in multiple ways when I was in classrooms and I was not engaged. And most of the time, the reasons that I was not engaged was because people were trying to put out fires in the classroom. And so I thought, if I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be in the classroom, I would never want to put out a fire. I would never want this to be the environment that I'm in. I would never be this kind of teacher. And then I decided, from going to school and from working with children in different programs and after school programs and in churches and in recreation facilities, I just wanted to make an impact in the classroom. And so when I got into classroom environments, I started realizing that the ways that you could prevent fires was to engage kids with different ways to also give them their own kind of escapes, and whether that be from family, from home, or from boredom.
Okay, so that now one of the things then that you just fed into my thinking is, you know, given your own life story, you have a very developed sense of empathy for children that are in similar situations. Obviously, my family background was not it was a fairly privileged background. One of the things I've been discovering in our research activities here is, you know, we all go blah, blah, blah about empathy, but sometimes it's how does an artist and a technologist understand each other's context, you know, what their reward systems are in those two different areas. And so we tend to talk of empathy in a rather psychological sense, but not on how people with very different contexts and objectives need to understand the context the other person's in. Does that resonate at all?
It does. I feel like there are often many instances where my vision doesn't really connect with other educators. And that's kind of a hard hurdle to get over. And so what we try to do is we tell people, hey, if we need to connect on something and you want to see what our vision is, let's build it together. And then let's start making connections with what we already have that exists. So my invitation to people that may not necessarily understand the vision that we're doing here with integrating philosophy and technology together is to come to my rooms, come take a visit.
Okay, so when you talked about philosophy, I told the joke I tell, and every time someone quotes a dead French philosopher, I get upset, because a lot of people in universities just drop those names to show how well-read they are. So the philosopher you mentioned is Jean-Paul Sartre, who was alive in Paris when I was born in Paris, and so we weren't in his social circle, but I was certainly one degree of separation from him and his circle. So what ideas of Jean-Paul Sartre do you feel are important for teaching people in your school?
So I think it's important for students to understand that nonsense can be impactful as long as it has focus behind it. And so one of...
Nonsense can be impactful if it has what behind it?
Focus, if it has focus behind it.
Okay, so that might be a good title for this podcast.
Yeah.
Nonsense. Okay, keep going.
And the reason I say that is because I was...
And then the citation is Jean-Paul Sartre. Okay, keep going.
The reason I say that is because I was inspired in my freshman level philosophy course. And from the first day that I took that course, I was inspired that that was going to be the path that I was going to take. Dr. David Bennett, who is the professor at Richland College at the time, who no longer is the professor now, but he inspired me in so many different ways to change the ways that I was viewing the world and viewing reality. And solipsism really gave me a good indication of how to make sense of things that were nonsensical, but gave me clarity on how to take myself seriously and unseriously.
So how would you explain to a 10-year-old what solipsism is?
So there are things in the world that make sense, but we don't really pay attention to them, but we still do at the same time. Like, we say that Santa Claus is available and he exists, and we do things for Santa, but The reason we do that is because we would like to keep that sense of belonging and togetherness alive, because there's something nice about that. There's something.
So doing a nonsensical thing makes sense.
Yeah. And we wish and hope that that would be all the time, but unfortunately, Santa doesn't.
Okay, so obviously we found some interest areas of discussion, and I look forward to working with you in the coming years and sharing insights and obstacles. A final thing, you used a word that triggered my attention, which was, what are the side effects of what you're doing? What did you mean by that?
Sure. So I think the side effects of what we are doing is going to create a fervor. And I think that it will shape education in a very interesting way. I think people are going to start appreciating more that play can be interesting, and then play can also be integrated as long as it's focused in an impactful way. I think people get so concentrated on assessments and refinement and shoehorning and putting people in a box of what they're supposed to be meeting as a standard. But all of us learn in different ways, and all of us come from complete different backgrounds, and we all can produce wonderful narratives and wonderful products, but we have to understand that most of that comes when we're enjoying that learning and that experience.
Okay, so as I mentioned to you, I'm on the advisory board for the American Toy Association, and they're struggling with exactly what you're struggling with. Right? How do we get people to understand that toys are actually for learning and that you can learn all kinds of things depending on how you design those activities?
Yeah.
And maybe as a side effect is that you'll be able to advise the American Toy Association how to develop. And this is where I get upset with the word toy, because the way you're using that word is not the way that most parents would use that word.
Yeah.
So have a final random thought?
No, I just hope that my only thought and wish is that more people would let students use their imagination in ways that they're not expecting them to use it. And I think the way that we can get past that is away from the teacher's desk, away from look forward, face me, answer the question sheet, and to start getting students to solve problems in ways that maybe we're, not expecting.
Okay, so for the parents listening, the fact that your kids enjoy using games, computer games, is actually an opportunity for them to learn all kinds of things. And if you send your children to your school, maybe they'll discover that.
Yeah, we need more. We always have room for more.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you.